Hello, hello everyone. Welcome to Real Women of Grace. We are tackling the conversation about empowering women in our circles, in our careers, in our communities. I'm really excited about this conversation. We haven't really tapped into this conversation before. So just to kind of get things started, I found this quote by Serena Williams. She is former American tennis player. She once said that the success of every woman should be the inspiration to another. We should raise each other up. So why do you think that it's genuinely difficult for some women in general to champion one another in their careers, circles, and communities? Why do you think that's hard?
I think probably the root of it a lot of times is our own insecurity. You know, that if someone else excels, we feel like maybe we're not as good as, we're not proving ourselves enough, we're not, and I think it taps into that insecurity that, I don't want someone to do better than I'm doing because that means I'm not enough. I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do y'all think?
Absolutely.
I think women have been conditioned to believe that there's only one seat at the table for one woman. And then we're all vying for that one seat. So if we buy into that, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, if there's already a woman at that proverbial table, we are vying for her one seat. I know I've worked several jobs and come in and I'm like, hey, we're the only two women here. Let's work together. And I have not been received well. Because there's this underlying notion that, like, if there's going to be a woman in the company, we only have one. That's it. Mm-hmm. And there's only a seat or a door open for one.
Yeah.
So, like, you almost have to fight for that spot. You can't let anybody else. What's the word when someone, like, threatens your spot?
Oh, yeah. I was an intern one time, and the woman that was training me, she let me know. She wasn't going to train me to the point where I would take her job. I was like, I'm an undergrad. I'm just trying to get some experience and learn about this. I was working in public relations then and learn about this area. And she made it known, like, I'm not going to train you so you can take my spot. And she is now the VP at that particular company. So she probably knows I'm talking about her if she's watching.
I was reading in our New Testament Bible reading this week, and in Galatians 6:4, it struck me because I knew, you know, we were preparing for tonight. And it says, be sure to do what you should, for then you will enjoy the personal satisfaction of having done your work well, and you won't need to compare yourself to anyone else.
Amen to that.
Mary, I just want to kind of bounce off of what you just said. I think that when it comes to, like, to women in general to kind of have that special spot in the workplace, I think it's not just women. I think it's, like, humanity. And the difference between men and women is, this is my own personal disbelief, is that I think men are competitive, but I think that women are comparable. And, like, I don't know a single woman who hasn't compared herself to another woman at least one point in their life. And I think it's so easy for us to, like, to analyze and overthink, like, am I doing the right thing? Did something I say go wrong? Like, am I doing the best that I could absolutely do? Because I think that for a long time, like, women had to really, really fight for places in the workspace. And that type of mentality has been passed down into, like, my generation. And it's like now, like, we have equal voices now. So, but why is the mentality still there? And I think that's just because of, like, that's just because of human selfishness. Like, we all feel like we need to be at the top. Like Tisha was saying, like, we have to be that only woman. There's no other space for other women here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, like, what thoughts go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my mom always told me that the two things that Satan loves to use against us is to either make us feel, you touched on it, Mary, with insecurity and then inferiority. If we feel either of those two things, chances are we're going to fall into that that comparison, like that you talked about, Leanne, and it just makes it really difficult to have positive relationships with the people around us, like in particular, like we're talking about women. So to have positive relationships with the women around us in our circles, in our careers, when we feel either inferior or insecure, because it affects like how we respond. It affects how we react to people and how we relate to people, or most of the time how we don't relate to people. And so instead, I know, like for me, if I feel insecure or if someone makes me feel inferior, what I will likely do is I will just withdraw from that person. Like, I'm not going to engage in that person. I'm not going to, this is just my natural tendency, not to say like I'm going to do anything that's directly mean or tear that person down, but I'm not going to try to build like this bridge or communicate with them and have this like, hey, we're a team kind of mentality, you know? God did change that in me a couple years ago. We're going to get into that later. I'm going to share that story at another time later on. But I know that each of us have experienced at one point or another in our lives, we felt like either another woman lifted us up or maybe they did something to tear us down. Mm-hmm. So what event in your life, whether it was positive or negative, did you personally experience that and it left an impact on you in one way or another?
Jim, before we jump into that question, there in the chat, they're asking for Mary to repeat that where the Bible verse was found.
Okay, so this is kind of funny. I tried to type it in there, and I can't comment for some reason. So I don't know. But it is Galatians chapter 6, verse 4.
6:4, okay. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Chapter 6, verse 4. I'll put it in the chat.
Thank you, Dr. T. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
I've had both. One was not really a workplace thing. It was more of a school thing. I was new to a school and the counselor was a African-American woman who had a PhD. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of hanging around like the so-called cool kids. And she pulled me into her office and she's like, "You're not like them. Stop it." Because I was cutting class with them and, you know, doing all of the ridiculous things. And she was like, "You're not like them. Don't waste your brain. Don't waste your talent. Go to class." She's like, "I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Go to class." Mm-hmm. And I thank her for that. At that moment, I didn't appreciate it. I mean, because I was like 12. But for her to take the time out and to see me and to encourage me, she's probably one of the biggest reasons why I got my doctorate is because she was so intentional too. And she held me accountable for the full 2 years I was in that school. Mm-hmm. So I really reflect on her and another teacher, Miss Jacqueline Rush, who I am still friends with her daughter on Facebook to keep in touch with. Both of them were so influential in my life and really kept me on the right path to get where I am today. So those were two very positive impacts for me. But negatively, unfortunately, I was a medical assistant for a couple of years when my son was a toddler. And I worked at one doctor's office and I was the head medical assistant. So I was in charge of all of the vaccines and allergy shots. And if you've worked in the medical field, you know those things have to be refrigerated. Mm-hmm. So we had a refrigeration cart that we would use during the day to take them from room to room, from exam room to exam room when we had patients. So I had to leave early because my son was sick. And I told the other medical assistant, I'm like, hey, when you have the last patient, take all of the vaccines out of the rolling cooler and put them back into the refrigerator because they can't stay in the rolling cooler overnight because they will spoil. And that's thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. She said yes. Told me she was going to do it. But she did not do it. She left them out. So the next morning I came in and saw them sitting in the cart and went to the head of the practice like, hey, like this is thousands of dollars wasted. I have to throw these away. We cannot use them because the cart doesn't hold the same temperature as the refrigerator. He goes, oh, I know she told us that you left them out and that you were going to tell us that you didn't leave them out. I was completely like blindsided. So I began to deny it and they were like, oh yeah, she said you were going to deny it. Like she totally, completely set me up. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating to me because I knew she wanted to be the head medical assistant and they just didn't pick her. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that she felt so deeply that she would sabotage me. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it was just my word against hers on what really happened. And I felt like after that, the doctors just didn't trust me fully anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was so tough for me because I was so young when that happened to me. That like for a few years after that, every working situation, I went in very guarded because I thought this girl was my friend. Like we hung out, we went to the movies, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was completely blindsided by that. So yeah, that was my, I've had both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. Like I've talked enough. I'm going to talk about it.
Well, you just see that though, don't you? Like how much of an influence we can have on each other, you know, positive or negative, either way. But seeing someone valuing them, I see Tanya wrote in the chat, Jen, you did this, asking me to give my testimony. That Jen, you saw that in Tanya. And encouraged her to do that. And wow, Tanya, you're just such a blessing to all of us. And I'm so glad you did that, Jen.
Yeah. Aww. Well, I had to twist her arm a little bit. but it was such a good story. And I told her, I was like, you have to share it. I said, it's all for God's glory anyway, when we share our stories. But I think one of the things I have to say though about yours though, first Dr. T, I love how in your first example you talked about like as a positive story, it was actually like it kind of came across almost like a critique. Like you probably didn't appreciate it at the time, but she was actually like speaking in a way that was building you up and encouraging you, even if it was not like in the way, like sometimes we think that an encouragement has to be like something really positive. And it's like, no, it's like, I see something in you, but like, you're going this way. You need to be going this way. It's like, she exhorted you to do like something different. Like she said, I see something in you. Like you need to do this, stop doing this. And go. That's really good. I get encouragement from women, but when I look back, I was like, I don't really know, other than like maybe my mom, like what woman really like empowered me to do something. I've had a lot of the negative experiences, I think, unfortunately. The one that really stuck out to me, I remember I at a former employer that I had, I stepped into a role where I was kind of like a second in command position. And the person who was probably my closest teammate, I wasn't like her supervisor or anything, but our roles were different. But she wouldn't have been like probably considered like the second in command, you know? So I remember though, one day another employee came to me with a situation that I had to handle. And as I'm trying to talk her, you know, get information to understand the situation better, this other woman comes over and she just like gets right into the conversation. She tells me, she goes, okay, stop talking to me. And then she just totally like inserted like her opinion. And I was like so shocked at the moment because I'm like, did she just tell me to be quiet? Like, it was like the polite way of basically saying, shut
stop
up.
Talking.
Stop talking. Just shut up. And I repeated it. I was like, did you tell me to stop talking? Because I was like stunned. And I waited for the other person to go away, but I was thinking, it made me feel though, like it made me feel really like inferior. And mm-hmm. the woman she's old enough to be my mom. And I think that was part of the struggle with the dynamic. I think she had a hard time seeing like me in a role that was somewhat, you know, above, I hate even saying that, but like, I guess because of the roles I had, I just, you know, I did different things that kind of probably placed me in a position where I took care of more sensitive things. Mm-hmm. And I think she was sort of oddly jealous of it. And I think she was like, I'm not listening to this young, you know, 20 something. Cause I was in my late 20s at the time. She's like, I'm not listening to this person. Like, what does she know about life and leading and things like that? And so it just made me feel like I totally questioned everything about, mm-hmm. like, am I really like, can I do this job? Like, is this position for me? Am I qualified to even lead? And it's something that, you know, it sticks with you for a while. You always question like, am I the right fit for this? You know, just because of that one interaction. So mm-hmm. I don't want to keep going. Leanne, do you have something you want to share?
Well, my positive experience is that when I was in high school, there was one particular advisor, and her name is Alicia, and she still goes to this church. But there, I had a lot of different issues that I was struggling with in high school. Mm-hmm. And Alicia was somebody who, like, I felt really seen by her because, like, she didn't, like, try to give me a bunch of advice or anything, but she just, like, kind of, like, acknowledged what I was going through. And, like, when you're a teenager, it's, like, you really struggle to be acknowledged. It's, like, you want to be seen and heard. It's almost like this mentality, like, don't talk to me, but pay attention to me. It's such a weird dynamic with teenagers. And like, I felt really seen by her and I felt like really validated. And that was probably one of the first times that I had an adult acknowledge me and really validate what I was going through. Cause that means the world to kids when adults speak into their lives and acknowledge them. And speaking on that, my negative experience was with a teacher that I had in middle school. Now, I'll just say this with full disclosure, I was kind of a bad kid, but
minor detail.
minor detail. Yes, I think everybody can attest to this, but when you're growing up, you realize who the normal, functional, healthy adults in your life were, and you realize, like, okay, that person was a little bit So I remember in middle school, specifically this teacher, she would go out of her way to yell at me in front of the class.
After school.
Like like she was just, I don't know what her problem was, but she was like fixated on me. And it wasn't like other people would do the same things that I would do. But when I did them, it was like a much drastic, more drastic issue. And there was one day where I was just taking long to leave school, and it was like everyone else had already left, but I had to get some stuff out of my locker. I don't remember what I was doing, but I left there and I was like walking out of the school, and she stopped me and she just stood there and she's like, what are you doing? Why are you here? You're not supposed to be here. And she went on for like a solid like 7 minutes, just like not shouting at me, but just like talking really, really sternly to me. And then after that, I was like, okay. And like when you're 12 years old, you don't really respond to those types of stuff with, yes, I completely understand. I will take this. Okay. And she did not like that. But so I just kind of like left the conversation and she walked the other way. But two other teachers saw me right after that. And they were like, are you okay? Like, what happened? Like, you look like you're about to cry. And I think that, like, a lot of kids, the ones who act out, the ones who are getting into trouble, the ones who are doing things that they're not supposed to be doing, a lot of those kids just want to be seen and heard. Yeah. And I think that, looking back now, that woman, she had something going on in her life where she needed to use me as a punching bag. So that's where I felt really torn down by another woman. That was probably one of my first, well, not one of my first, but one of my major
women. Yeah.
I hope she's listening. Yeah. No, I don't.
What if we all looked for the good in everybody that we were with, right? And affirmed what we saw in them and valued people the way that Jesus valued. What a different world it would be, right?
Indeed.
What a perfect segue to resolving conflict, Mary. That's what I'm
asking. You do that on purpose, but I'm glad it helped.
Very true.
That's that anointing on Mary.
I was going to say, so some of the things that we talked about involved a little bit of, you know, opportunities for conflict. And at some point or another, I mean, if you're going to be with people, working with people, around people in any way, you're going to inevitably come into some times of conflict. So how have you effectively resolved conflict with other women, or maybe one other woman within your career circle or community?
I wasn't always good at this. I tend to be conflict avoidant. Like I used to be like a runner, like, oh, this is getting intense. I'm just going to disappear, like tapping out. I'm done. but I have learned through much therapy and much healing from the Lord that is not a healthy response. I do tend to, as I was just sharing with you all before we went live, like I do tend to go in with a very relaxed, peaceful, joyful perspective on everything. That's just my normal disposition. I do think that communication is key. I have had conflict with friends, women, in professional environments where I'm like, hey, can we have a conversation?
Yeah.
And if I feel like that person may seem that they may be a little volatile, I may invite a third party, like, could you just be here while we have this conversation and hold us both accountable in the conversation? I will say that there has been times that doesn't bode well. Like if sometimes when people are mad and they're making a conscious choice to be mad and they just want to be mad, there is nothing you can do to resolve that conflict. Like nothing. You could be the kindest. You could be the sweetest. You could be complimenting them the whole time. I've complimented people and they're like, you don't mean that. And I'm like, I do. Yeah. I genuinely see this in you. And even though we disagree on something, that doesn't mean that I don't see the best in you. We just have a difference of opinion on something. So yeah, I think communication is key. Mutual respect is necessary.
Yes.
You can disagree with someone and still have respect for them. Respect their opinions. Respect them as another human being that has opinions. Respect them as another child of God. Like just because you're God's child, so is that person you're mad with.
Yeah. I think also just understanding kind of like Leon, what you were able to, you know, conclude, like from like, you know, what your teacher, like how she was treating you, you concluded like, she's okay. She's obviously going through something. Mm-hmm. I think that can happen a lot as well. That when we are encountering someone who maybe we're really struggling to resolve conflict with, like there's been situations I've been in where it's like, okay, I've had that one-on-one conversation. I've brought somebody else in to help kind of mediate a conversation. I'm trying to extend every bit of respect and kindness that I possibly can, communicate like with like genuine, authentic, you know, intentions that like, hey, like we're on the same team, or I'm here for you, or whatever, you know, the relationship dynamic might be. And sometimes like you still, it might kind of in the moment, like they'll be like, oh, okay, that's great. Everything sounds great. And then it's like 2 days later, there's another like butting of heads, or it's like, whoa, why are you talking to me like that all of a sudden? Like, what did I do? And then I started to just like realize like, this is not a problem with me. Like there is something going on with this person. And sometimes, I don't know if you ladies have ever done this before. Like, have you ever, like when you've been in that kind of a situation, have you ever stepped into that like that and said like, hey, is something bothering you? Like, I'd love to like talk to you about it, you know, because sometimes I've not had the boldness to do that. I just will like pray at my desk or something, you know, but which is still a really good option. But I'm just saying, like, I think if you feel comfortable and, you know, and you ask the Lord for strength to do it, give you the right words, I sometimes wonder if that is a conversation that needs to be had. Cause sometimes it's not really so much that they have a problem with you. Like it's that there is something deeper going on that maybe just it's affecting them. So yeah.
I think asking those direct questions in those moments, like, does this have anything to do with me? Or you seem upset. Are you upset?
Yeah.
And does that feeling have anything to do with me?
Yeah.
And how am I causing you to feel that way? Like, I think those very direct questions kind of help if that person is emotionally healthy enough to walk into that conversation, because that's a whole other component of like emotional, healthy, spirituality, emotional maturity. Like, some people are just not there.
Agreed. Yeah. And that can take some discernment, you know, to be able to determine that, like, are they a believer or not? You know, that definitely shapes how you approach things. But yeah, I don't know. Does anybody else have any thoughts though?
I think just one thing that's been helpful to me is addressing issues in times of non-conflict. When the temperature is already high, it's maybe not the best time to try to discuss something, but to know when it's good just to give some time, let the temperature come down, and then come back in a time of non-conflict, you know, and say, hey, I sense some tension between us before. Could maybe, you know, chat through that? I'd like to understand. I think also that saying, seek to understand before you seek to be understood. And we all like to be seen and valued and understood. And so I think going into conflict that way can be a helpful thing to really, I really do want to understand, like, I didn't mean to offend you. I didn't, whatever. I want to understand what I did and how you're feeling and how we can move on from this.
So I know we kind of talked about comparison briefly, but I wanted to kind of dive into a little bit more, unpack it a little bit more. So our culture is highly, competitive, and we compare all the time, like social media and everything. But then, like, by nature, women, I think we're just wired that way as well. Highly not competitive, like we said with guys, but very comparative, always comparing one another. So how do you think that we can develop positive attitudes towards other women to be able to empower them and lift them up, like cultivating that kind of an attitude and environment that, you know, is not so heavy on comparison? Like, how do we do that well?
I think the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question is like the way that you view yourself. First of all, because the way that you view yourself is going to reflect the way that you view other women as well. If you have a lot of criticism for yourself, if you were raised with a really critical mother, you're going to be criticizing other women a lot.
Yeah.
Understanding, first of all, that like I'm a child of God. I'm a daughter of the King. I was put on a specific path. And sometimes some people are going to go along with that path. Sometimes other people are going to go in a different path. And we all have different, like, unique lifestyles and careers. Like, if God intends for this woman to get this position and not me, I have to understand and accept that. If I'm going to get that position, then she has to understand that as well. God works every single little detail out. And I think that there's an element of control to all of this. Is like, I want to be on my path and I want you guys to be apart from me. I think that woman, you know, we have to stick together, you know, because I truly believe that, you know, it's really powerful when a group of women like come together and like God has enabled us to do so much. We have intuition, we have encouragement, we have like this nurturing like softness about this, that about mm-hmm. us, that like no one can take away from us. No. And when that's used in the right way, in the right attitude, we can do like, we can do amazing things. Yes. I really do believe that God has given us all different gifts, and we have to understand that from ourselves and for other people.
Yeah.
It's a good word, Leon.
It is. I totally agree with that. I totally agree with the fact that most of that negative energy comes from that self-doubt and self-hate and that bad self-talk. Mm-hmm. I watch a podcast on YouTube. It's called The Basement, and the guy's name is Tim Ross. I love this guy. He's a little bit edgy, so I will not be dropping his link in the chat. He's not for everybody. But he had such a point the other day. He said one of the commandments is to love your neighbor, but you can't, to love your neighbor as yourself, but you can't love yourself. So how can you possibly love your neighbor well? Yeah. I was like, mind blown.
Yeah.
He's like, you have a hard time loving your neighbor because you don't love yourself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, yeah. Like a lot of people don't have a lot of self-love. So it's impossible for them to extend love to others because they don't even love themselves. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to piggyback on that point. Additionally, Scott's going to be so happy in this moment if he watches. But with the SDI personality motivation test, it talks about that in your color palette, you're looking for one of the three things: significance, acceptance, or security. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you're lacking one of those three things and you're searching for one of those three things, mm-hmm. it can manifest itself in negative behavior towards somebody who may already have it and you want it so bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the comparison comes from, where you're like, oh, I wish I was as confident as she is, or I wish I was as eloquent as she is, or, you know, those types of conversations.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I'm at a stage in my life where I don't think and feel that way anymore, where I truly love who God has created me. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a journey to this point of like, mm-hmm. oh, I wish I was thinner, because I'm just naturally a fuller figured woman. Mm-hmm. So I'll see people in like little tiny clothes and I'm like, yeah, my body has never been that tiny. I've had seasons of that. But at this stage of life, I truly appreciate who God made me, how he created me. And for me personally, this is no judgment to anybody else. This is just Dr. T saying that for me not to love myself is an insult to God who created me.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I never want to insult the creator who made me. So mm-hmm. to love myself is to show true appreciation for who he created me to be and honor him as my creator.
Yes.
That's so good.
Absolutely. And you may have heard me tell this story before, because this was a real turning point for me. But I think to your point, Dr. T, like accepting who we are. So years ago, as a young woman, someone invited us over for dinner one night, and we went over to their house and we walked into their beautiful home. It was decorated just fabulously. The table was set. Just, it was gorgeous. And then the food came out and everything was made just right. And it was... And as I sat there that night, I just felt myself beginning to diminish. Like, my house isn't clean like this. I don't know how to decorate like this. I can't cook meals like this. And all of my insecurities began to take over. And when we got in the car to go home, and I just thought, I can never, just all those insecurities that began to take over. And the Lord spoke so clearly to me, and this was decades ago, and it was a life-altering moment for me, just very clearly, Mary, are you here to impress people, or are you here to bless people? Mm. Where do I find my significance? Is it because I can impress someone with something, or is it because I'm walking with Jesus, and he's the one who matters to me, and he's living in me, and like the Bible says, rivers of living water will flow out of us when we're walking with Jesus, you know? Yeah. So just a turning point for me where I said, I can be comfortable in my skin because I'm not here to impress people.
Mm-hmm.
To bless people. So anyhow, that was a big turning point for me. And you just came to mind as I was listening to you talk, Dr. T.
So I have to share real quick that I think that one of the reasons or one of the ways, I guess, that we can cultivate attitudes that lift women up is part of why I wanted Real to be a ministry. The whole essence and the core of it was because I wanted things that are relatable and I wanted authenticity. I wanted transparency. And I think that when we become transparent with another woman, especially like if they're, you can tell like another woman's having like a bad day and they're like, you know, messing up or making mistakes left and right, or like their kids are screaming or just whatever it is, to just step into that and to be able to just say, oh my goodness, like I've had a morning too, you know, like this happened or, you know, whatever, to be able to just be open and share like, hey, here's my flaws, here's my mistakes, here's my bad day, you know, and just to be able to do that, it automatically will bring people together. I mean, Leanne, myself and another woman who's going to be one of our speakers for our retreat this weekend, we got together on Friday night and I told them, I said, the biggest blessing that I had from that night was just the level of transparency, just for women who have said, hey, this is my life. This is what, these are some of the things I've done. I'm not proud of them, but this is what has happened. And this is how God's redeemed it. And it's like, but it's like, here's me. I'm an open book. I got nothing to hide. And that automatically, because it brings walls down, you know, like women, we put up these walls, these barriers where it's like, we can't show mistakes. Like we want to be, you know, we want to be perfect. We want other people to think we're perfect, even though we all know we're not perfect. We somehow mm-hmm. want people to believe we are. And if we just stop hiding behind a mask and just get real with other people, mm-hmm. it will take away that level of comparison, I think, very quickly. Because whatever you think that someone else has, when they open up and share, oh, no, like, this is the story of my life, or this is what I've walked through, it automatically makes you become instantly relatable to that person. Mm-hmm. So we only have a few more minutes, and I really wanted to get to the really important question. My favorite question is talking about Jesus, of course, and how Jesus demonstrated empowering women in the Bible. I personally, like, I feel like it's one of the most missed themes in the New Testament, in the Gospels, especially. I love the Gospel of Luke for this reason. There is story after story about women. So how did Jesus demonstrate the need and importance of lifting up and empowering women?
I think Jesus was so countercultural in the way that he never treated women as second-class citizens, mm-hmm. right? In a society where that was the case. He had close yeah. friends who were women. He traveled with women. He discussed theology with women, which definitely yeah. wasn't a thing back then. Right. And as was discussed yesterday in church, I mean, the most significant event that ever happened in all of history, Jesus' resurrection, who did he choose to be the witnesses of that, and to be the ones to go back and tell other people? So I love the way that Jesus lifts up women and yeah. values women.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think, and sometimes when I say this statement, people have take pause with it and have conflict with it. But I truly, for me, I'm like, you can't put God in a box. If you believe that he is the creator of all things and he can do anything, even in changing the nature of how we exist, he could have done it differently. So the fact that God chose to send his son through Mary, a woman, mm-hmm. that in itself talks, you know, speaks of how he feels about women. God could have just made his son appear in a bush. He could have brought him out of the dust like he did Adam. Like, And, you know, sometimes people are like, well, that goes against God's nature. And, you know, but I'm like, but he's God. He could do anything. This dude parted a sea just because he could. Like, he literally could have made his son come through anything, any way. Mm-hmm. He chose his son to come through a woman. Mm-hmm. And I, like you said, Jen, there's so many poignant points in the Bible. There are whole books dedicated to women in the Bible. You got Esther, you got Ruth. Most of Judges is about Deborah. Like, there are just so many key points. And First Samuel opens up with the story of Hannah. Like, I could just go on. You know, I love talking about women and women in the Bible. So the fact that I think Jonathan did an excellent job of tackling mm-hmm. these past 2 weeks. I've been watching from Georgia, so you can tell him I'm watching. That he has tackled two very hard topics that seem to be a hot button in Christianity, period. Mm-hmm. Not just in specific denominations, but in Christianity, period, has been a hot button for a long time. That mm-hmm. that Christ honors women, that he respects women. I mean, in Imago Dei, and in the book of Genesis, where it starts, he empowers us just as much as he empowers men. So mm-hmm. we are equally made in his image, just as men are. So, you know, this was my dissertation. So I'm going to tap out because y'all know I could go run over time and be into the next episode.
It'll be midnight and be like, okay, I think that's all. Yeah.
she's still talking. Oh my gosh.
And everyone else has logged out except for Tisha.
Anybody else have any final thoughts they wanted to share? Women in the Bible. I'll just share too real quick before Mary, before you close us in prayer. One of my favorite little details of the Bible is when we read the story of Martha and Mary. It's like the classic story. But I love how when Jesus invited Mary to just come and sit at his feet. And a lot of times we interpret that as like, oh, we're just going to like rest by Jesus, you know? And it's like this very like sweet, serene picture. But in biblical times, when a rabbi was to say, hey, come and sit at my feet, he was really inviting them like, come and listen to my teaching, come and be my disciple, which like Mary, as you mentioned, was like radically, like culturally, I mean, it was like, wow, like how could, you know, only guys, you know, were invited to be discipled by a rabbi. So just the fact that he was always so inclusive of women and how women were a part of his ministry in so many different ways. It's one of the things I just really love about Jesus. If you really like, when you go and read the gospels, just really pay attention, because even in like the parable stories, Jesus will give an example that kind of, it speaks to men, and then he'll give an example that speaks to women. Like he might say something like in regards to like, oh, being a shepherd, which a lot of men would probably really get. But then he'll talk about like yeast in a loaf of bread, which is like, who was baking the bread back then? I mean, it wasn't the men. So, I mean, that's where women were like, oh, like he's relating to me. He's speaking to me. So anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox.
You said, who was baking the bread?
We all know.
That's hilarious, Jen. Well,
Mary, will you close us out in prayer?
Let's pray. Lord, thank you for knitting us together in our mother's wombs, making us just like you want us to be. And I pray that we will be content with who you made us to be. And that we'll be very busy encouraging other women and building other women up. Thank you for loving us. In your name, amen.
Amen. All right, ladies. You can join us and listen on your way to work or while you're doing things around the house or running around, whatever it is. But looking forward to next month, next conversation. Blessings over all of you. Thanks for being real with us.